Yeah! There it is! When that beat crashes in, you know it's time to begin. And wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to...
I tried to time it.
Brand new theme song, ladies and gentlemen. This is amazing. DLC. Yeah, I'm loving it. We know, you know, the DLC is brought to you by our patrons over at patreon.com/DLCpod. They're bringing the show to you. If you'd like to be one of them, or at least check out the perks that you could get if you were one of them, head over there, patreon.com/DLCpod. You can get ad-free episodes, bonus content, including our paid DLC bonus show, and so much more. DLC, of course, your downloadable commentary for the week delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free. DLC is the show all about games in their many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata, that's spelled with two N's and one T. And I am joined, as always, by my friend slash co-host slash nemesis. The guy who's also loving our new logo, which I hope you saw on our album art, if everything went according to plan, which it very well may not have, but you'll know before we know. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hello, Jeff. Hello, everyone. I am at the beach, so my video and everything's a little different. My audio is probably a little different, but we are here. We have new theme song, new logo, same everything else, but that's...
It's a new era. It is the new era, the post-5x5 era. This is all made possible because of our patrons. Thank you, patrons. We were able to pay for a new theme song from White Cube, which is Jason Sherry and T. Ryan Arnold. Love that. Custom made for the show. Love it.
Take that, Elon Musk.
Take that, Elon Musk. Exactly. No longer will you hear our theme song in ads and various things all across the internet. It only took us 8 years to get our own theme song, but it also was because of our patrons. And I'm super grateful to White Cube, Jason Sherry, and T. Ryan Arnold. They have awesome music. You should check out their music. We will have a link in the show notes, and patrons will get this theme song delivered to them as well, because we're grateful for that. The new logo, which I hope you've saw, the patrons have already seen, designed by Corey Schmitz. We're super excited. It's a new era, and it's happened because of you, but... Ladies and gentlemen, we couldn't start a new era without one of our favorite people. What better person to bring on for the first show with the new logo, with the new theme song? You know the DLC always stands for your downloadable Kanata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, I am so excited because once again, DLC stands for deciding on likable content. Because that's deciding what's good, and from What's Good Games, the What's Good Empire, our friend, one of our longtime friends, Andrea Renee, is back with us. Hey, Andrea, how are you?
What's good, guys? I feel like I need my glow sticks or something. That theme music got me all amped up.
It's good, right? Well, you know, we've had the same copyright-free theme song for 8 years. And we floated the idea to folks that we were going to have a finally update the theme song. And people are like, oh, no, it must be hype. It must get me excited. That is the one requirement. So that was the only requirement I told the fellows at White Cube, is like, it's got to bring the hype. So hopefully it did that.
Oh, absolutely. It did. It's such a fun, unique moment coming up with a identifying sound for a show. I remember when we went through that process, when we launched What's Good Games, I very gratefully had a friend who's a professional composer who actually works a lot in video games, Dale North, that composed the What's Good Games theme. And awesome. He was the first person and only person that I would have trusted with composing some podcast music. But like when you go to somebody who composes and they're like, so what do you want it to sound like? You're like, ha.
I want it to be awesome.
I want it to be cool. Is that a word that I can use?
You want everyone to like it?
I don't know how to describe music like that. Yeah.
That's where artists that know their craft are the best. Same with like the logo. Like Corey, I love everything he's ever touched. And it was like the conversation. It's like, you know, it's like a thing that's like a feeling of like the wind on my back on a cool summer day. And he's like, you mean this? And I'm like, clearly that's exactly what I meant.
Yeah, exactly.
It's pretty awesome. It's pretty awesome. But like Christian said, new logo, new theme song, new delivery format, no longer part of the network, as you know, but same old show. And that means we start the way we always do, the story of the week.
Story of the week. It's the story of the week. Story of the week. It's the story of the week.
Story of the week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. And you can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. You can also send comments or questions, even your own reviews of games if you'd like to hear those on the show. But also, you could participate in one of our communities on Discord, where 5x5 DLC, and on the subreddit, which is 5x5dlc.reddit.com. But Andrea, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
Man, this is a tough one because there's some really good ones. I feel like my gut says the biggest story is the Witcher announcement from CD Projekt Red. Like, I think we all in our minds knew that more Witcher was coming because of just how wildly successful The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt was for CD Projekt Red.
Yes.
But I think that I just assumed that they'd be working on Cyberpunk for a couple more years before we heard about it, or they would just keep making things for Gwent, because I get so many emails about Gwent. The next Gwent expansion is out. I was like, gosh, how many people are playing Gwent? I would really love to know. But I'm excited that they're working on more. I actually just finished season 2 of the Netflix series because I was a little bit behind. I didn't get to watch it back in December. And
why were you busy?
You know, I have this toddler now, which is still technically an infant. She'll be a toddler in a couple months. Not like you guys would know anything about that, right?
Right, yeah.
That is wild, though, to think that I didn't have a baby the last time we did the show together. And now I'm like part of like the young parent club.
Yeah.
But thank you for calling us young, Andrea.
Maybe what I meant to say was parent of young kids club.
There you go.
Okay. Now I feel worse, but thank you.
You're welcome.
You know what? My kids are younger than Christian's, so I win.
Yeah, you win. Basically what I'm trying to say is it made me want to jump back in to The Witcher 3. And that was a game that I walked away from because it just wasn't really gripping me in the way that I had hoped it would. And I know that what I played of it, I played probably like the first 30-ish hours of it, which is, you know, a decent time to sink into an RPG. But of course, it's just scratching the surface on all the content in The Witcher 3. But after reading, I started reading the books because of the series, because I watched season 1 of the Netflix show and was lost. Had no idea what was going on.
Yeah, season
and
1
it's partially
was like,
because of the storytelling in that the directorial choices and the way that they chose to unfold the story, but also like I had no idea like what was happening in the book. So I've been reading the books and that has gotten me more interested in the series. And now that I've finished the series, I'm like, oh, I think I got to go back now and replay. I actually really want to go back and play The Witcher 2 because I vividly remember talking about that game with Garnet back on Week in Confirmed.
Yeah.
Which feels like a lifetime ago.
Which it, only because it was a lifetime ago. I mean, you've created a life in that time. So yeah,
it's true.
Yes, I think Witcher 2 is really good. I really enjoyed it. I think Witcher 3 refines it and makes it feel much more modern, and it feels much more like a game now. Because Witcher 2 is clunky in a lot of ways, but really cool how much choice affects your decisions in that game. And there's whole sections of the game that are closed off to you or opened up to you based on big decisions in Witcher 2. Anyway, more Witcher, I think, is exciting. My question is, you outlined all of the reasons why CD Projekt Red would probably dip back in. Obviously, the Netflix show, very, very popular. People are into this IP in different ways, in fresh ways. It's been an extremely popular, high-selling game for them for a long time, but also this rejuvenated interest because of the Netflix show. But also, You know, the cyberpunk didn't do so good. So it feels
I'm glad you brought that up, because that's what was really exciting to me about the announcement. So for people who didn't see it, the big kind of headline about the announcement was not just that a new Witcher is under development, because obviously it was, but that they are in fact partnering with Epic Games for Unreal Engine 5 and kind of moving away from their Red Engine, which is what the previous games were built on, going to what they're kind of dubbing Red 2.0. which I think is super important, because it was obvious to all of us that there were engine problems in Cyberpunk 2077. And I think it's going to be good for both the dev team and for players that they move to a platform or to an engine that has a lot of technical support. And Unreal is one of the, if not the, you know, de facto engine to build games on right now. So.
Yeah. Well, it feels to me a little bit like, I mean, I don't want to cast aspersions, because who knows, this was probably already in the works well before it. But it does have a little scent of, you go to the concert and the band plays their new stuff and everybody's like, play your old stuff. We loved your old stuff. And then they're like, oh, okay, here's our greatest hits, you know?
Well, to be fair, to that point, when the band announced their new stuff, everybody was very ready to like their new stuff.
Right. Yeah. And then the album drops and people are like, this doesn't sound like Freebird. You know, whatever.
Right. It wasn't the idea of new stuff.
Right.
It was how new stuff came out.
Yes.
And so I think, you know, Andrew had touched on it a little bit, and they did talk about they're still going to continue to work on Cyberpunk. Like, Cyberpunk is not, they're not, you know, cut and burn away from it. But it is interesting to see, because that game originally had a, disclosed roadmap of like years of content.
Yeah. DLC and stuff that we're going to have for years to come. Yeah.
And it kind of seems like now maybe not.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my biggest question to you, Andrea, and maybe I'm misremembering this, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I seem to recall them being very clear that The Witcher 3 was the last Geralt of Rivia game.
Well, they did say in the teaser image that came out, it says a new saga.
Right.
So there's been a lot of kind of deep dive theorizing of super fans online. If you look at the medallion that's in the teaser image, it's not the wolf medallion that Geralt of Rivia wears. It is, in fact, a lynx, and has been confirmed by CDPR to be a lynx. Now, there is no lynx school in Witcher canon. And so that's kind of leading the internet to kind of come up with theories that maybe this is a new school of Witchers, that perhaps Ciri is going to be heading up and it's going to be a game focused on her, where you play as Ciri. Maybe it's going to be a brand new Witcher, or what some people are hypothesizing, which I think is kind of interesting and would be fun, is if you get to create your own Witcher. And there is no canon character, but in fact, it's like a UGC character where you kind of, you know, kind of build your own character creator Witcher within the Witcher universe.
That'd
we were cool. talking about it on WGG last week, and how fun it would be if it wasn't just Witchers, because there's so many different kinds of cool archetype characters in the Witcher lore. Like, what if you could make a sorceress or a druid or an elf or a dwarf, you know? Like, there's so many kinds of cool characters that
much more a role-playing game than
exactly than, if they went full RPG and really kind of let you roll your character that way. But it would be a big change for CDPR to do a game like that.
Might be really cool, though. I mean, obviously there's lots of role-playing choice at the beginning of Cyberpunk, right? So they've already dipped their feet into that kind of
I want to see elf genitals, don't you?
They would sparkle so much
and are very pointy, very pointy,
too pointy, let's be honest. What do you think about that, Christian? Is that, what are you hoping for from a Witcher game? I mean, obviously this is not happening anytime soon, right? We're multiple years away, probably a lot of multiples.
Yeah, 2027 was what I joked when we'll get to play.
Yeah. But, you know, I think kind of exciting for fans of CD Projekt Red and fans. Do you think this kind of, let me frame it this way, Christian. Why do you think they announced it now?
Unreal 5, I think, is why they announced it now. And also because they're probably going to be seeing some recruiting and some hiring and some technical information kind of come out. And I think it's good to get ahead of that stuff versus someone, oh, this person that used to work at Epic is now over at CDPR and doing, I think it's kind of good to get ahead of it. And they didn't do a, release date. They didn't do, it's just that we are working on this style thing. I liked the style of announcement they made. I hope that it's one. I would love it if it was Keanu Reeves, because I thought his work in Cyberpunk was great. I liked him. I liked that character. And I like that he's already been in Unreal Engine. I know it's not going to be him as The Witcher, but he was already in the Unreal Engine 5 in the Matrix demo that came out. They already have a great scan of Keanu. I know it's not going to be him, but that Matrix demo really sold me on the idea of Unreal Engine 5. And so a huge RPG world that is built out on that technology is super exciting, I think. And so hopefully it's wild to me that in the scope of one game, CD Projekt Red seemed to have gone from can't miss to I hope their next game's good. You know?
Oh, like, come on. I think that's a little hyperbolic. Lot of people, in fact, millions of people loved Cyberpunk, and it was lauded as being a wonderful RPG by a ton of outlets as well. No denying that they had technical problems on the console launch, but I think the PC version was almost universally loved by people that played it. And now the new console version for PS5 and Xbox Series X is getting a new wave of praise as being a great game. So I don't want to like poo-poo it too much. No. I think Cyberpunk was still a good game. It wasn't like trash. It wasn't like Alien Colonial Marines, right?
So. No, and we talked about it on this show. Like, I played it on PC on a 3080, and I had a really good time with it. But I do think it has Witcher and Witcher 3 and Wild Hunt just have this aura around them as like one of the best games of all time style thing. And whenever Cyberpunk is talked about, for better or worse, It doesn't have that. It has the problems and the development stuff and the patches and this, that, and the other. And I think it is interesting when you have these big games and a studio is kind of defined by these huge tent poles, it kind of is that bellwether of like, whatever you make, I'm going to buy it. Here's my tattoo. And then it's like, the next one is like, I don't know anymore. I'm optimistic, but I agree with both of you that it's going to be a while before we find out.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. But I'm excited. I mean, I've been a CD Projekt Red fan for a long time, and I was one of those people that was disappointed by Cyberpunk. And I want them to be redeemed. I want the next Witcher game to be phenomenal. And I'm actually really excited about Andrea's take on it. Like, yes, make it a full role-playing game. Make it a, you know, let me craft my own character. I think part of the joy of the Witcher games is the storytelling, and the storytelling is you have the license to create a story that's more specific when you have a very specific character that you're playing, right? But I think that hasn't stopped a lot of great role-playing games from having great stories, and I think that would be a really cool way to make it happen. So
I will say that I, in another game we'll talk about later, I created my own character where I could create any tag character I wanted. I really loved it. I thought it was really cool. And then I finished and zoomed out, and I was like, oh, I just made Geralt. That's all I did. It's literally just.
all roads lead to Geralt. Yeah. I'm just going to pull back the curtain for a second, because we're recording right now on Sunday night, and it's the Oscars are happening. And I don't know about you guys, but my phone just exploded.
Oh,
because I thought you were going to say something else at first.
Will Smith punched Chris Rock on stage?
Yeah, Will Smith just walked on stage and smacked Chris Rock for making a joke about his wife. Anyway, just thought that'd be a fun thing for some people listening later who went, oh, that happened in real time while they were recording the show.
Now, let's be
literally
honest.
Everyone I know has texted me, what is going on at the Oscars right now? This is insane.
But the
now
articles
I have to like pull it up.
Will just be Oscar viewership up this year.
Well, it's going to be up now. Spike now, because everybody's tuning in to see like why did he just assaulted Chris Rock on stage for making a joke about his wife.
But hey, crazy. Nobody saw it, you know, because who's watching crazy. The Oscars? Am I right?
Not me.
Am I?
Anyway, sorry to sidetrack everybody, but I just thought it's one of those things that when I listen to a podcast and then something happens in real time that had already happened, that, you know, when I'm listening to it, it's the past, but for them, it's the present. It's always a fun thing.
Yeah.
Well, to that point, Jeff and Andrea, I will say this. I cannot believe what Sony announced this week. Holy moly.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, we were expecting the one announcement, but getting the other one also? Wow. What a week Sony's having.
All right, Christian, what is your story of the week?
Recording on Sunday, and Sony hasn't made their announcements yet, but they have. We will have nuanced discussion of that after, you know, next week's show. For right now, I guess what I'm most excited to announce is that I've started a game studio and I'm ready to be acquired. If anyone wants to acquire me, I haven't made a game yet, but I have a really I don't have a team either, but I have a
Fortunately, studio. you don't have a reputation either of having made any games.
I mean, I have a reputation. It's just not for game development, unfortunately. Ask my kids. It's a different reputation. A little strict, I think. No, but Sony, the acquisition game is not over, and Sony acquired Jade Raymond's studio, Haven, which is her new studio. Jade is former Ubisoft, former Stadia. She was leading the internal projects at Stadia and then started her own studio, Haven, in Canada. And Sony acquired them. They haven't put out a game yet or kind of talked about what they were doing other than publicly it was going to be a AAA live service style game. And that seems to be what Sony was interested in, is getting more into that live service game dev. And yes, I can see you both looking up the Will Smith thing as I'm talking, and neither of you are paying attention. And I'll keep talking, but I wanted to call that out.
Crazy moment, Christian,
to our listeners as I'm trying to get through this story.
I had the decency to at least mute my microphone.
I'm at the beach, guys. Come on. I think it's interesting because Jade has been involved in some of the, you know, the biggest IPs over the years. I think she was attached to a Star Wars project for a little while also.
Right, because she was working at Motive, right?
Yes.
So I think what's interesting about this story too, Christian, is that a lot of people have no idea who Haven Studios is. I tweeted about this news and was like, I think this is really exciting. I'm glad they found a home. And a lot of people were like, who's Haven? Why should I care about who they are? And I was like, that's a very valid point, because a lot of people don't know the name Jade Raymond, right? Because she hasn't published a game in a long time. It's been a while, because she's just kind of bounced from project to project and kind of found these unfortunate dead ends, because sometimes that's just the way creative development works. And the stuff with Google was such a bummer all around that she went to build this incredible team and brought a bunch of really talented developers on board. And then Google's like, actually, we're going to like divert some of these funds. I think we as industry pundits saw that writing on the wall a long time ago. And it was really disappointing that Jade didn't see that writing on the wall earlier. And like all of those devs lost their jobs. And so I'm glad that she was able to give them a home at Haven. Now Haven has a home at PlayStation, and hopefully PlayStation won't do to Haven what Google did to them.
Yeah.
And that she'll actually be able to publish something cool, because I think she's super talented and yet hasn't been able to shine in a long time, because she's just kind of run into these business problems. Like, I don't know a better, more succinct way to say it other than that, but it's just like, it's a bummer, man, what's been kind of happening to her creative journey.
Yeah. I think you put it right when you say dead ends. Like, she's just been these things that sound really promising and really high profile, and they, you know, she walks out on stage at the event and she's really excited, and you can tell she's revving up for something big and talking about these huge projects that are going to be, you know, big brand new IP and really ambitious AAA games. And then it's a dead end. And then it happens, it's happened, what, two or three times now in a row. And it feels like this is a more sure thing going with Sony, but we still don't know. And my biggest question is, how much starting from zero does she have to do, and her studio have to do? You know, is it like, okay, well, all of that stuff is still owned by Google, you know, all the work that was revving up for whatever that was going to be, now you have to switch gears and start from nothing? Or, you know, how does that even work, and how far off is this studio from making something? But clearly, you know, Hulst and the team at Sony really believe in this studio enough to acquire it. So
I've heard from several folks over the years that she is incredible at building teams, incredible teams, and getting incredible people together and do things. And despite running into dead ends, that's kind of always been the underlying theme with a lot of her projects. It's incredible teams that can make incredible things. And then as you mentioned, Andrea, sometimes despite all of that, things just don't happen. And so I think for Sony, it's that and showing that investment in the online service games, kind of like their purchase of Bungie, where they then also let them kind of keep Destiny still. Like they seem to be really investing in that always online.
Let them keep Destiny.
Just keep it. But we want your tech for other stuff. I don't know. And then also I think it's important for Sony to get a foothold into that hot and very talented Canadian developer market. There are a lot of incredible studios and developers that are working out of Canada. And Sony, I believe this is their first studio there. And hopefully it creates that pipeline for talent to have another place to work instead of, you know, some of the other big studios there, and they can build great things.
Yeah. Yeah. So the quote was that Jade Raymond and her team were making a persistent, scalable online game for PS5 and PC, which is particularly focused on pushing the technical capabilities of the PS5 console further. That's evidently a direct quote from Jade Raymond herself. That's exciting. That's the kind of thing I would want a, you know, swinging for the fences, right? That's what I want a developer to be doing.
UGC stuff, though, is a little concerning to me.
Tell me what you mean.
So as part of that story, Jade talked about how there's going to be like a user-generated component of the game that they're going to be creating. And that, to me, just raises some red flags, because there's very few games, in my opinion, that do UGC content well and have continued to do it well.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, you automatically think of studios like Mojang with Minecraft or Roblox. Mm-hmm. I think Media Molecule as a studio has done UGC stuff as well. I mean, look at Dreams and how successful that is. But I mean, not a lot of games can incorporate UGC and incorporate it well, especially in a narrative focused game. It kind of feels like you got to pick I'm doing a crafted narrative AAA experience, or I'm doing sandbox UGC. Doing both to me is like an impossible ask.
Well, maybe she's cracked that nut in some brilliant way. You know, that would be cool. Let's to hope. See.
I definitely don't want to see that studio fall on their face. I really don't. There's a lot of great people there. I would love to see them fly.
Well, like you said, I want to see her actually publish a game, and not just her, but her studio and her team. I want to see, you know, she was instrumental in creating the first Assassin's Creed, right? It's clearly there's a big potential there, and a lot of people have seen it over the years. But there's just been such a long time period between actually making something that we can play. And so whatever this is, I hope it actually happens. But again, like our first story, this is going to be many years out.
Why do you say that, Jeff? There are no other stories this week that would imply that games get delayed ever. I don't know why you would assume.
Christian, are you talking about the fact that
Jeff was right?
Oh, I'm so right all the time.
Well, this one we already kind of knew, but now we did already kind of know.
It's official that Suicide Squad was delayed till spring 2023, which is wild to me.
It takes a long time to put those detonating chips in the back of people's heads.
That's it does.
You got to be very precise with that.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't want to just have a suicide duo. You want to have a full squad.
Yeah.
Anyway, dumb. My story of the week actually is another thing that's probably a little while out, but something very exciting to me personally. This is, I guess, technically in the rumor category, but it seems to be pretty well sourced. Ubisoft reportedly has both a new Prince of Persia game in the works, which is separate from the Sands of Time remake that we know about that has been delayed. Everything's delayed. But also a sequel to one of my favorite games of the last few years. I think one of the most underrated games, a total gem, Immortals Fenyx Rising. I am so excited that this franchise has sold enough, that was popular enough to earn a sequel, because I loved that first game. I just had so much fun playing it. I thought it crescendoed at the end in such a spectacular way. I thought it had wonderful humor. The aesthetic was not great, and I think it turned a lot of people off, but I thought it did the Zelda Breath of the Wild thing, template, you know, it was a Breath of the Wild like, as we've seen a few things now, Genshin Impact and others. But it did it really, really well. I thought it refined that formula very smartly. And I had so much fun with it that I'm super excited that there's going to be more Immortals games. And alongside this rumor is the announcement that Ubisoft has a really big showcase plan this year, where it's going to discuss around 20 new and already announced titles. So, Andrea, tell me your take on... Oh, by the way, I should also mention that alongside this is this news that this new Prince of Persia game, which is as yet unannounced, will be much more along the lines of something like Ori, or, you know, like a Rayman game. It's a 2.5D game, like a 3D rendered but two-dimensional game, kind of like a throwback to the original Prince of Persia game back in the old days, old days.
And starring Jake Gyllenhaal, like the original.
So, Andrea, any of this exciting to you? What's your take?
Yes, it is. Sorry, I have these Discord notifications popping off. I'm like, oh no. So I closed my Discord window and then I was like, oh no, wait.
Who's Will Smith slapping now?
So the Ubisoft stuff, I admittedly haven't done a lot of reading on, but I think what's exciting, maybe I should just off the top let you guys know that I don't care about Prince of Persia.
Really? At all? You've never played a Prince of Persia game that you like?
I've never cared about Prince of Persia.
Okay.
I know people are very excited about it, and I'm happy for you. So let me just start with that being like, Prince of Persia does like literally like nothing for me.
Fair but enough.
When it comes to like other Ubisoft stuff, I'm a big Ubisoft fan. I love a lot of their franchises. So anything that they're working on, like, I normally like keep eyes on, but this is just one of those stories that I haven't really done a lot of reading into. So I feel like Christian should probably give his take first.
All right. Christian, you liked Immortals Fenyx Rising almost as much as I did, I think.
Well, I should say now, this is new information to me, but I am not an Andrea Renee fan, apparently. I had no idea before, but now with this Prince of Persia.
Oh, no.
You just came on stage and slapped Prince of Persia in the face. Yeah, it's hard. Jeff, how do I say this? It is really hard for me to be excited about any game Ubisoft hasn't even announced yet, because even when they announce them, they disappear forever.
You mean like Skull and Bones?
Skull and Bones, Beyond Good and Evil 2.
Oh, yeah.
That whole hit record incorporation into the games, which had like some controversy around it with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, but I thought could have maybe made some cool stuff. And
yeah, speaking of UGC, right?
Yeah, and never materialized, and versions of what was it, the drone for the Division. And I've played, I think I can say this. If not, I'm sorry. I've played a lot of their games that haven't come out over the years, and like those closed alphas and stuff like that. And some have some promise, and they seem to have just kind of gone away. Like, I like a lot of what they make, but it seems like a lot of what they make that's not Assassin's Creed doesn't come out.
All right. Well, supposing that this is legit and these games do come out.
Yes.
What do you think? I think it's pretty bold to take Prince of Persia back to being a side-scrolling game. I mean, there was the games back on the Apple II in the Commodore. You know, that's what it was. And then it became this 3D game with Sands of Time, and the games past that.
I think it's a smart way.
Five or six of them, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a smart way to reintroduce the franchise and hopefully find a way to distinguish it from Assassin's Creed. Because there was a time where it was like, how was this not? This could be Prince of Persia, what Prince of Persia became. Like, as you became just kind of living in the world in Assassin's Creed more and more and more, and they broke away from that. This is the future. This is the memory kind of approach to it. Hopefully it also means it comes out faster, because it is a scaled back game and isn't a 100-hour open world adventure. Mm. And then I hope the sequel to Immortal Fenyx Rising, I hope they kind of do let that franchise play more. What I really loved about it was the playful nature and how it was like self-aware and kind of broke the fourth wall and winked at a bunch of things. And I hope they give them the time and resources to find fun, cool new ways to do that stuff. I think it would be really exciting. And it's not just a copy paste new map. I'd be less excited about that.
Well, I'm hoping that the second Immortals game is like a different mythology, because they've sort of done that mythology, and I can do, you know, they can transpose it on a different mythology and put Phoenix into a new mythology. I think that'd be really cool. Well, we'll see what they do.
I think that game did really well for the time period that it was released. I think like December releases are so challenging, and that game kind of came out against a lot of other big open world games at the time.
Yeah.
But still managed to find an audience. Like the time that I spent with that game, I really enjoyed, and everybody I talked to that played that game loved it. So I think that that franchise has potential to do really cool things, because I felt like it blended what I loved about Assassin's Creed and what I loved about Breath of the Wild like into one game. Yeah, and made its own unique thing. It was really, really funny. So I'm glad that they're to see that they're investing in making another one, and hopefully it grabs more people and they come out in a more favorable review window or launch window throughout the year. Like if they had launched that game in January instead of December, I think it could have reached so many more people.
I think that's a great point. Yeah. And I wish it was had. Competing. I feel like it's super underrated. Go ahead, Christian.
I was say it was competing with other Ubisoft open world games.
Yes.
Like it was competing against Valhalla, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really strange, but clearly it did well enough to merit a sequel, or at least according to this rumor. As far as the Prince of Persia game, I am a fan of Prince of Persia. I mean, I'm old enough to have played the original. I remember playing it on my computer at home and just being dazzled by the animation. At that time, it was just nothing like it. It was all rotoscoped and amazing. So I guess I'm a Prince of Persia fan for life just from that experience. And I've enjoyed, I think, almost all of them. The rebooted, like, no subtitle Prince of Persia that came out in whatever year that was, 20, I don't know, long time ago, 2012, 2010, whatever it was, which I think kind of was a misfire for a lot of people. I might be the only person that loved that game. I loved that. That was the one where you kind of couldn't fail. It was all about traversal. And if you fell, and your friend would come and grab you and pull you back up. I loved that game. It was such a cool, it was almost like a puzzle game of traversal. And it really hasn't been anything like it since. I would love them to double down on that, which I doubt they will, because I feel like that's what made no more Prince of Persia games come out. But I would love for it to feel more like that, this wonderful traversal game of, you know, almost like an Ollie Ollie world, but not on a skateboard, you know, like running on walls and jumping and stuff. I think that could be super neat, but who knows what they're going to do. I wonder if it'll be much more like an Ori or a sort of a indie platformer that we see a lot of now.
Ori 2 certainly brought more, and yes, there was news about that studio recently as well, not to talk about the game without at least bringing that up a little bit. And there's been also continued stories about Ubisoft as well. But Ori 2 had more combat even than the first one. Like, it's not hard for me to see a copy paste kind of style of like that exact game, but you're just a different character, running and fighting your way through that world. I think could be very exciting. And also those Rayman games were just drop dead gorgeous.
So good. We haven't gotten one in a long time. When was the last Rayman game?
It's been a while. Yeah.
Legends? Was that the last one?
I think so. I think you're right. That's been at least three or four years.
I mean, they've done some really cool side scrolling stuff in the Assassin's Creed games too. I think that, you know, it does make me think it's going to be a smaller scope game if they're committing to doing side-scrolling. But I'm glad you brought up Ori, because that's, I think, a really good comparison of a side-scrolling game that did really well and feels like a AAA game. And you would think if they're going to invest again in Prince of Persia and that IP, that they would, you know, dump a lot of money in it. So it'll be interesting to see where they go and where they land.
Yeah. Again, three stories this week, all of them very far off, but I think all of them pretty exciting. So we shall see. All right, let's talk about the games that we have been playing. But first, I want to thank our sponsor, which is Shopify. Shopify is more than a store. You can connect to your customers, drive sales, and manage your day to day. Shopify gives entrepreneurs the resources once reserved for big businesses. So upstarts, startups, and established businesses alike can sell everywhere, synchronize online and in-person sales, and effortlessly stay informed. We use it. I use it in my
team, I guess, my co-conspirators on the dungeon run use Shopify. That is the way that we sell products for that show. And it has made our lives so much easier and allowed us to have such a huge variety of options for our customers. And scaling your business often is this journey of possibility, endless possibility. Reach customers online and across social networks with an ever-growing suite of channel integrations and apps, including Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Pinterest, and more. You can synchronize your online and in-person sales and gain insights as you grow with detailed reporting of conversion rates, profit margins, and beyond. It's more than a store. Shopify grows with you. This is possibility powered by Shopify. And I can tell you from firsthand knowledge, it has, like I said, made our process of selling merch so much better. So go to shopify.com/DLC, all lowercase, for a free 14-day trial and get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features. Grow your business with Shopify today. Go to shopify.com/DLC right now. That's Shopify, shopify.com/DLC. All right, it is time to talk about the games that we have been playing, and all three of us have been playing another new release. The release is, it's February, March, it's nonstop. It's insanity how these huge AAA releases are just incessant. It's really too many games. It's too many games. But all three of us have played a big new release from 2K this week. Tiny Tina's Wonderlands. Andrea, tell me what you think of that game.
I have been having a great time. So full disclosure, I did a really fun sponsored ad with Tiny Tina and the Kind of Funny Kids. If you guys saw the latest Tiny Tina trailer, we're featured playing some of the endgame content in the Chaos Chambers that is the endgame for Tiny Tina. So just get that out of the way at the top so people know. I was part of the Borderlands 3 reveal. So I've done a lot of work with 2K, and I'm a diehard Borderlands fan. I know you can't see it on my set right now, but I've got like three different claptraps back there. So I was super excited for this game to come out because I think Tiny Tina as a character is so wonderful, and the way that Ashley Birch portrays her is phenomenal. And it's been really interesting kind of seeing Ashley as a voice actress kind of evolve Tina as a character from where she started in Borderlands 2 to where she is in Wonderlands. If you guys have played all the way through that content, it's really fun to kind of see how she has grown as an actress, because Tiny Tina was kind of one of her first big VO roles in video games way back when Borderlands 2 first came out, which is kind of wild to think about that she's like Aloy now.
Yeah.
And yeah, among many other accolades that Ashley Birch has. But so that's been really fun, but the game is just smooth. I think it's everything that you love about a first-person shooter, particularly about Borderlands and that like schluter genre that Gearbox has really kind of defined or become to known as. But the fantasy backdrop just makes so much sense, and it feels so much more fun to be in than I had in Borderlands 3. And I really love what they did in Borderlands 3, particularly the individual loot stream, which is like God tier, and I want every game to have that now. But it just is way better to be in this universe, and I think it's because of the narrative and how handcrafted so much of the story is because of the DM nature of role-playing games and tabletop.
Yeah, I'm having a blast with it too. I feel like, you know, we've gotten all these games that have come out recently, you know, your Elden Rings, which we'll talk about in a second, but And Tunic, and you know, even Horizon Forbidden West. It just feels like game after game after game are these big, concentrate on it, think about it, invest in it, these demanding, like, you know, huge, serious things, right? And I'm reminded when playing Tiny Tina's Wonderland, sometimes I just want to have some fun. Sometimes I just want to lean back in my chair, turn on a game, and blow some stuff up and laugh a little bit.
It's got a pew pew the stuff.
Little pew pews, and it's fun, and you know, loot pops out of everything, and it just gives me all the nice feeling, and it's just easy. I can turn my brain off to a certain extent, and sometimes that's just great. Christian, I know you've been playing a lot of Destiny, you know, the Witch Queen, which kind of scratches that itch too, and I'm sure a lot of people have that itch scratched by that game right now. But for me, I hadn't really been scratching that itch lately, and I just reminded that sometimes that's what I want to go to a video game for. It's just to have an easy, breezy, fun time. And you are so right, Andrea. I just feel like as much as this feels like a total conversion mod of Borderlands in a lot of ways, it's great. It's so much more fun to be in that world. And Borderlands is a pretty fun world already. But as somebody that plays a lot of D&D, has a D&D show, I am certainly...
What's that D&D show again?
The Dungeon Run, which, by the way, my last episode is next week.
Where are people watching the Dungeon Run these days?
At twitch.tv/thedungeonrun.
Okay, cool.
Amazing of you to ask, by the way. Thank you. Anyway, so I am inclined to already love that aesthetic and get all those inside jokes about, you know, playing on a table and D&D and all that stuff.
But roll for initiative, baby.
Yeah, she's great. I mean, it's great and it's so well written. It really is goofy, just the right amount, and doesn't take itself seriously at all, and has some big fun twists and turns. And
the voice cast: Wanda Sykes, Andy Samberg, Will Arnett. Like, it's so good.
Yeah, it almost is like a full on, you know, theatrical movie, animated movie voice cast. You know, it's that high tier, and they're all fantastic, and they all, you know, nobody's phoning it in, it feels to me. They're all doing a top tier work, and it's super fun. And like the new stuff of having an overworld, I thought was handled really well. The point I make about it feeling like a total conversion mod is, you know, you start the game and you get, you know, you start with like just a melee weapon, and you're like in this fantasy environment, and you got a sword or an axe or whatever, and then they give you your first ranged weapon, and it's like this crossbow hand thing. I'm like, wow, are they really going to do Borderlands all in a fantasy thing? And then they're like, nah, we're going to give you machine guns and sniper rifles. Well, it's still Borderlands, dude. I'm sorry, it still is. And to a certain extent, I'm like, that's kind of a cop out, but also it's fun, and who cares? And I like that.
Exactly.
You know, it sort of gives up a little bit in the total conversion of the total conversion, you know, but I also can't really gripe about it. But Christian, you've also been playing. What's your feelings?
Yeah. So, Andrea, I think there was a time when we were going to talk on this show about right when kind of Witch Queen launched. I know we were kind of talking about getting you back on, and it was around then. Because I know you stand Destiny.
I unfortunately had to bow out because my whole family got COVID. So sorry about that.
I just thought you were trying to grind for the raid. It's fine. I understand.
You know, sadly haven't played enough of Witch Queen, but I have been playing.
It's such a wonderful game. And I know we have talked for years about our love for Destiny. And that's what brought me to Tiny Tina's. Like, I was not a big Borderlands 3 fan. I love Borderlands 2. I played a lot of it again on my Vita. Like, I was that one person who bought it and was like, yes, this is how I will replay this 80-hour experience on a handheld with tiny little nubs, because, again, it's just fun.
It's how I played Diablo on my Switch.
Yeah. Great. Great way to play it. Borderlands 3, I felt, kind of really didn't do anything new. And at that point, I found the humor stale. It's a lot of toilet humor. There's a decent amount of this person is a small person humor. And humor, trust me when I say this, I've been on the wrong end of it, is subjective. There are times that you think something is very funny and you stand in front of an audience of 800 people and you say it and they disagree. and Borderlands 3 was a moment where me as the audience did not find it funny. I thought it felt a little outdated, a little sophomoric in a way that didn't click. And Tiny Tina's is the opposite end of the spectrum. I think the humor is not elevated to be high art, but it has moved past a lot of that sophomoric humor that existed in Borderlands 3 and to me felt stale. And it hangs its hat a lot on the D&D tropes and stuff like that, and fantasy tropes. And Tiny Tina is such a wonderful character. And I mean this with all of the love reminds me of my youngest daughter in so many ways. Like, she's just always like, let's go, baby. Like, just that personality. It's super cute and endearing. And I love the way that she brings that, actually brings that character back again in Tiny Tina's. Like you mentioned, Andrea, if we've seen the character kind of evolve through the Borderlands franchise, I think she handles it wonderful as this DM role player character, has a lot of fun with it. And I really love the way that this game, Jeff, you mentioned you start with a melee weapon, and I like how this game makes the melee pretty awesome. Like, not even late game, mid game melee weapon is a very much valid option to run as your main in a lot of ways. And for me, before, Borderlands was never that. If someone got within a 5-foot radius of me, I felt like I failed. You know, like, Borderlands was maximum explosions very far away. And if someone got close, it was like, dang it, I messed up. And now there are times where I'll draw people in to go to town on my, whatever my enchanted mythical thing is at this time. And I've mentioned on this show a lot, I love shooting and powers. And what Tiny Tina's does is it brings, replaces grenades with magic. And it's still, you know, grenades in Borderlands are pretty fantastical as is, but making this, that slight genre switch of making left bumper, left trigger, magic now instead of grenades is just, again, scratches that Destiny itch in a big way, feels really fun and cool to do. And some of those abilities as they, depending on how you build out your character and as they progress, is really fun and rewarding. And I love that. I think it's what, a third, a fifth? It's not far into the game. You get to have a subclass where you're kind of not locked in the same way that you were before in a lot of other role-playing style games. And it kind of just lets you play. I really, really love that. But I'm not at in-game content yet, but go ahead.
I will say that like the other Borderlands games, to me, maybe this is just me personally, but I've always felt like the classes in Borderlands aren't really that different from each other. I mean, they are, but they're not, because you're dependent on the, it's a loot game, right? So the loot that you get is really what differentiates you from somebody else. And the perks of the class are nice and they're cool. And maybe you get a turret with one, and maybe you get a bird with another or whatever, but it's not. And I kind of feel like this game is that way too. Like, there's character creation and make a class, and that's,
I'm going to disagree with you there. Right. I think the classes are very, but it's all about how you play. It's like, if you're going to focus your build on the guns in the game versus on your abilities, and that's the play style that you have, and that's okay. But to say that the classes are identical or kind of play the same is, nay, sir, I'm going to disagree.
Well, I didn't say the word identical, but
You just did. I heard you say it. You literally just said it.
It's just not for me, not enough variety in the classes. Because everything is so dependent on what spell you have equipped, what weapon you have equipped, you know, all that stuff. But maybe given it enough credit for having divergent classes, but I just felt like I played two or three of the classes and I was like, it's just like Borderlands to me. It's like, yeah, it's basically the same thing in the course of playing it. But that's not saying it's a bad thing. It's just not tons of variety.
It's not the most hardcore RPG where, like, I'm a dwarf or I'm a mage or, you know, that broad. But I do think it is on your, and especially in Tiny Tina's, it's on your character sheet, right? So, like, while what you see the guns we're carrying might look the same, my chance of a critical hit, what happens in that event, what my magic's able to do, all that stuff is pretty different across classes. And I think that's where then it can reinforce your play style with how you want to use those things. Cause I know what my melee is going to be. I know how I'm going to attack with range with my magic. And so I think that's where you're able to play. My really only, and I'm playing on PC. I know there are complaints of stuttering. Again, I'm on a 3080. It has been flawless, like, great frame rate. I have everything on ultra. It's stunning and runs beautifully for me on PC. I feel bad saying this because really my only real nit with the game right now is I wish it did, and maybe it does in late game stuff that I'm not at yet, but I wish it did a little more of letting Tiny Tina play. Like, one of my favorite games of that is Call of War as Gunslinger, where it's like this very much unreliable narrator. And it's like, I walked into a bar. Now surrounded by five people. Five people? That's not that many people. I thought you were a badass. I was surrounded by 25 people. And then, like, you know, 20.
The game does a lot of, there's that moment toward the beginning where, you know, She's like, it has C4. And I'm like, well, that's not very fantasy. Fantasy yes. Four. You know, I thought that was kind of fun.
Again, that's why I feel bad mentioning it as a nit. I want more of it. Like, yeah. I love when it's there and I kind of want it to all be that. And then, Jeff, this might be a different, longer discussion that we have somewhere else, but I love how it handles my problem with the ludonarrative dissonance that everybody points to about shooty shoots. But what has really weighed me down over the years is this idea of, you are the sacred one, go solve this problem, but also go help me make these baskets. Like Tiny Tina's is like, you are the chosen one, go solve this big problem, but also who cares, baby? And I'm like, thank you, Endgame, for acknowledging how ludicrous this is. It doesn't matter. Everything is fun because we're just playing in this make-believe world. And I love that they came up with the air quote solve for it. And I wish more games would. It doesn't have to be silly like that. I think there are other serious ways to do it. And I've harped about it enough on this show, so I'll save it for like a bonus content sometime. But more and more, it grates on me of like, I'm talking about Horizon, guys. It's really bothersome.
The errands that you have to do? Like, there's literally a list of errands that you have to go run while you're saving the world.
Yes.
Yeah.
But yes, but like, I like how Tiny Tina handles it, where it's just like
video game thing,
fun and flippant and whatever. And at some point you hit this level gate thing and she's like, yeah, but what did you expect? You got to go do these other things again. Go get stronger, dude. And I'm like, yes, Tiny Tina, you are...
Well, it's
out there. Let's go play.
It's skewering the entire, all of the tropes, you know, and I think it does it very, very well and very smartly. And there's lots of really fun moments. And
yeah, absolutely.
It feels like a game, back to back fun moments, connected by fun, satisfying gameplay. And that's enough. Like, it doesn't have to be, is it going to be my game of the year? Is it going to be my top five? No. But am I probably going to put a lot of time into this game? Yeah, because it's just easy breezy cover girl.
It's not punishing either. Like the first moment that you walk up to the character creator vending machine, they make a joke about how, yeah, it's free. It doesn't cost you anything if you want to completely change the way your face looks.
Yeah.
We're not going to lock you into a hairstyle or a hair color or a nose shape for the whole game. You can literally change your entire character's look at a whim and it's going to cost you nothing.
Yeah.
And I love that they kind of hit that right on the nose of being like, hey, we're just here to have fun. This game is about just whimsical fun that you have with your friends, and we're not here to punish you. We're not here to make it grueling. But is it skill-based? Yeah, of course it's still skill-based. You know, it's still a shooter. I think sometimes people lose sight that these Gearbox games are at their core an FPS game that has a lot of RPG elements. But they still are, at their base, a shooter, right? So I think sometimes people are wanting more RPG elements, but it's like, well, that's not the kind of game that Gearbox makes, and maybe they will make that game in the future, like we were talking about. But I love it for what it is, and I also want to call out and give them props for just having such amazing gender fluidity moments in some of their characters that we don't get to see enough in video games. I'm saying like, hey, do you know what gender this character is? No. Does it matter? Absolutely not. You can pick this body type or that one. It literally says this one or that one. You can pick what kind of voice you want. They don't gender lock anything. And I think, you know, we're seeing more developers really lean into that inclusivity, but we're not quite over that hump yet. And I get that narratively for some games, it doesn't necessarily make sense. But when it can be an option and it's not an option, it's a bummer. And that's why I'm so glad that Gearbox is like, we're going to just throw everything in the kitchen sink and you can decide how you want your character to be.
Yeah, I agree. And as much as I've enjoyed the Borderlands games, I think this might be my favorite of them.
Same.
It's just so much fun, and it doesn't have any of the sort of seriousness. Even Borderlands is funny, but there's like the tiniest sliver of seriousness. This game is like, no, we're not even doing that. It's just all goof times, and I mean, I'm here for it, you know. I love the feel of the world, you know, the, you know, rainbow unicorn cities and you know, fantasy trappings. You're right, Christian, it's gorgeous. It supports super ultra wide natively. Love that. It's super fun. Super fun. We're in such a crazy glut of games right now, of really high caliber games, that this feels like a game that might fall between the cracks for some. But it is very fun, and you can play it with your friends, and you'll...
Local split screen!
Yeah.
Who's doing that anymore? Nobody!
Yeah. So that's Tiny Tina's Wonderlands. We're all big fans. What else have you been playing, Andrea?
Well, if people follow me on Twitter, they probably have seen me tweeting about the thing that literally everybody else is tweeting about. That's right, Elden Ring. So I am not a From Software person. Never played the original Demon Souls. I dabbled a little bit in Dark Souls 3. I tried out Bloodborne. And I was like, you know what? I ain't got the time to have the game just like slap me in the face over and over again. Like, that's what it feels like to play From Software games.
It's like they're Will Smith and you're Chris Rock.
Exactly. Well, no, I feel like it's way worse than that. Because I watched the clip and it didn't seem that bad. It seemed like a little chip.
I still haven't even seen the clip. I'm still waiting till we finish to watch that.
I feel like the people who love these Souls Bros, what I call them.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about the pleasant, kind, compassionate Soulsborne players. And I know you like are out there.
Audience.
And thank you for showing up in my feed when I needed you. But the Souls Bros are also always there to be like, you just don't get it.
Yeah.
And so I've stayed away because I really think a lot of their fandom is toxic in a way that I just do not have time for. It's just not what I want to choose to spend my minutes on this planet with.
Yep.
But everybody and their dog was talking about this game. And as somebody who is part of a voting jury for the Game Awards, I know that this is going to come up later in the year. So it's like, I got to play at least enough of this game to feel competent to vote on if I think it deserves awards or not later on. Right? So.
Yeah.
Here I am playing it, and I keep logging back in and playing it. The next day, I'm like, I feel like I want to log back in and play it. Why don't I go to YouTube and look up some guides about what I should be doing? And now I'm looking at subreddits and watching wiki videos, and I'm like, what's happened to me? What's going on? I never liked Soulsborne games. I think I don't actually like this game. I think like Brian Crescente was tweeting about, I think I love to hate this game and I don't know what to do about it.
This is the bad reality TV of video games for you?
Yes. Yes, it is. It's like when you start watching Too Hot to Handle and you're like, I know this is trash TV. Why am I watching this? And you're like, but I just want to find out what happens. But no, I think for everybody out there, like I absolutely laud From Software on what they've achieved with this game. I think their formula shines in an open world setting, but I also think that the open world setting provided them with a lot of hurdles that I don't think they cleared. And some of those are technical and some of those are design. And I think that those problems and those hurdles are what's going to keep me from fully enjoying this game the way that a lot of other people clearly are. I absolutely think that there's something unique about the way that From Software has boss designs and combat design encounters. The aesthetics and the production design of their worlds are some of the most unique that we see in video games. I think a lot of that, you know, is Miyazaki's influence. I was talking with Alexa Ray Correa, a good friend of mine and former coworker, but now video game writer, about if she thought that George R.R. Martin's influence in the game kind of helped broaden the audience for this game in a way that maybe it wouldn't have if he hadn't been involved. And, you know, we both kind of agreed that, you know, maybe people heard that he was involved in the game and they decided to give it a shot. And so I think that those touches really make it an appetizing thing for gamers, especially when everyone's talking about it. But it's just... it's so frustrating when we're in the year 2022 and there's just basic multiplayer functionality not built into the game. And there's basic single player functionality not built into the game. I mean, even Sekiro had a freaking pause button.
Yeah. I mean, I had a tweet this week that went viral that it wasn't even comparing Elden Ring to Horizon Forbidden West.
Oh, so yeah. What movie did you compare?
I quoted you too.
Yeah.
What movie did you compare this game to?
No,
what
no.
did you do?
Yeah,
what did you do?
Yeah. Thanks for bringing that up. I didn't even.
You
compare,
brought it up.
I just referenced Elden Ring, and I just said, "Yeah, I know Elden Ring. Everybody's talking about Elden Ring, but
oh yeah,
wouldn't it be great if we could all not forget the fact that I think Or not. I didn't even say
Horizon
that.
Is just a superior game.
I didn't say superior.
I said, I just did. Come at me, fanboys. Well, come at me, bro.
It's the one I currently prefer as well. But I didn't compare them. I said, I know everybody's talking about Elden Ring. I just want to say, I think it would be awesome if more people were talking about Horizon Forbidden West because I think it's superb on every level. And then
how
it just became this firestorm of like, those two games compare fight, people fighting in my mentions. And it's like, I didn't even mean to do that. But
I think what you hit it though is that it's frustrating that we as people who have been looking at games and talking critically about games for years recognize that it can be a wonderful game, but it has legitimate problems. And for some reason, even people, our peers in this industry, are just glossing over these very big problems that the game has from a technical standpoint at the very least. So sure, we can disagree about design choices, that's fine, but like technically it's broken in a variety of ways, and people are like, I don't care, it's still the best game ever made. I'm like, it can't be. Table flip, it can't be. Mad about it.
I mean, I don't disagree with you. I think for a lot of people, you know, it's not a bug, it's a feature in a lot of those things, and the sort of intentional obfuscation of everything, the intentional, difficulty, making things where it's the game doesn't meet you halfway, you have to go all the way, is the thing people like about it, you know? And I'm in your camp, at least at the moment, because I haven't really given the game as fair shake as I plan to, but I definitely am more annoyed at the lack of conveniences and the lack of basic functionality on a certain level than I am appreciative of it. But I think for some folks that it feels to them like a throwback or they earn a thing in a way that most games don't ask of them, and that is rewarding when they sort of make it through that gauntlet.
But Christian, I'm doing a terrible job. An Elden Ring fan? Like I'm like dying to like know what you, if you're what side of the fence you're on.
I love Elden Ring. I will likely never see the end of it, just because of my skill cap. Sekiro was my most played Xbox game. I played it on Xbox the year it came out. Bloodborne, I don't think I've seen credits on a single From Software game, but Bloodborne, a lot of Bloodborne. That's the first game that really clicked with me. I think the faster speed of that game. Sekiro, I loved. Elden Ring, I really love. And I think for me, I agree, like pause and like, you can pause. First you hit this button, then this button, then you wink four times and then it's paused. Hopefully they don't patch it. And yes, I'm playing the PS4 version on my PS5 because that's the only way to get a locked 60 frames per second. So I would love for them to have an announcement like CD Projekt Red, like we're making our next game on Unreal 5. And I would be like, oh, good. I love you From Software, but your engine could use some help. And I would love it doesn't need to be Unreal, but you know, whatever, like that kind of stuff. But I think between it and Horizon, I am struggling with that narrative pull. It is wonderful, it's well made. I get into an awesome combat experience in Horizon and everything clicks and I'm like, this is what I'm here for, this is incredible, this is beautiful. And then a lot of the parts of the game feel like I've done it a million times. I'm getting sensations of like Ubisoft open world fatigue, and so then I'll go to mainline the campaign and then I'll end up under level recommended level for the next mission, and then it will recommend, but then I've done all the side quests on my quest log because clearly I didn't spend enough time in the town picking up all the side quests, but I didn't want to do that because so I'm kind of in this like familiar game experience rut with Horizon, whereas in the first Horizon that narrative was super compelling to me, and here with this one, even after, I'll be very vague, the drop, it still hasn't really got its teeth into me. And Elden Ring feels fresh in a way. I'm trying to think of like a food analogy, but it's like, you know, you've been getting sushi at your local sushi restaurant your entire life and you like it. And then you go to the whatever restaurant in New York and there's no menu and the chef's just like this.
The omakase like, experience.
Yeah, yes. And you're just like, oh my good. Like, I didn't like that one, but this one's incredible. And what's next? And everything's exciting. And that's how Elden Ring feels to me right now. And I think because it's open world nature. Don't get me wrong, I'm hitting my head on the wall a lot in Elden Ring, but because of the open world nature, I feel like there's always something for me to do. Whereas in Bloodborne and Dark Souls 3, I think is one I just played a tiny bit of. And even Sekiro, it was like, oh no, this is what I need to do. This is what I need to do. And I couldn't get past it. And eventually that became frustrating. And with Elden Ring, I could technically just farm the ghouls in that opening field ad nauseum and eventually be level 1,000, you know, or whatever it takes. Like, there's always something to do. And so it feels fresh and new in a way that other games don't. And that
I like
it's exciting.
Christian's example of a game feeling fresh is I could farm ghouls in the opening area.
Fresh. I was saying that the game feels fresh. Hold on. The game feels fresh. And then the difference from other From games that it gives you. I'm not saying that's what I'm doing, but everything else about it feels different and exciting.
I 100% agree with you that it feels different and fresh, but I think it felt fresh just for a minute. And then I was like, I feel like I've had this experience before. And I was like, oh yeah, when I played Skyrim for the first time, this is what it felt like. It felt like there was this giant world that opened up. But wouldn't you know it, that game had a quest log. That game had menu systems that you could read and an RPG system that you could track. You know, I think what's frustrating to me is I really want to fall madly in love with Elden Ring because I think there's so much of it that's really magical. Like going into, like finding a door in the mountainside tucked behind a tree. You're like, ooh, I found a secret dungeon. This is exciting. Or a catacomb or something. And it's hasn't really been since I played Elder Scrolls, which was that like 2012, 2011, whenever that Skyrim came out, I'd have to look it up, that I've had that kind of sense of discovery. I think, I don't know why, I have to just be honest, and I think it's irrational. And I am saying it out loud knowing it's irrational, but I just get so irrationally mad when people are like, it's so innovative what From Software is doing. And I'm like, no, it's not. Been done before. They're just not doing it well. Like, I will admit that the game looks beautiful when you're playing it on the right settings. When I played it first on Xbox Series X, and I don't know why, but it looked like trash. I'm going to say it looked like a PS3 game I was playing on Series X. And then I literally bought a second copy of the game because I'm a monster, because I had a friend who's playing on PlayStation who volunteered to come in and help carry me through some boss fights. And I played it on a PS5 now, and it looks way better. But I still keep thinking, like, I just want to know what I'm doing. Like, I've now played probably 30 or 40 hours, which is way more than I ever intended to play. And now I'm just, like, a little bored of farming. I'm like, you know, I could keep running around on Torrent and running away from stuff, running from, you know, Touch of Grace to Touch of Grace to just unlock the map. And that's going to be fun for a little bit. But I do want to, like, fight stuff eventually and not just get killed every time. And so I'm trying to figure out, like, how I can balance that out. I just, you know, I like, this is why I say I love to hate this game, because I clearly keep coming back to it and I clearly keep looking up guides on how to get good at this game, which I, you know, don't do anymore. But I don't know. I don't know what it is. I just get mad about it. It makes me mad. Let's
see that Elden Ring tattoo on your back. I know it's there. It's I mean, so it was a patron's discussion, right, Jeff? I think we had Danish was on and talked about how he kind of unlocked the game in his head. And I think it was interesting to hear him talk about, like, the combat and how he came at it from like a former fighting game perspective, and how Elden Ring asks of you differently as a player and how to engage in these combats. Cause I think you look at them and it's like, you could watch a let's play of someone taking down a boss in Elden Ring and someone taking down a huge beast in Horizon. And it might look the same in terms of, like, what's happening, like a third person action game, rolling combat, striking from afar, going in for melee. But the way that those two things actually happen in terms of the player interaction, I think is fundamentally different in approach. And I think that's kind of what it brings fresh to the franchise or to the genre, where I agree it does do a lot of what Skyrim and that ilk have done before in terms of world and exploration. But I think that kind of combined with the From combat, I don't know. But I also should say that this past week, when I sit down at my computer, I'm double clicking on Tiny Tina's every single time when I have the choice between
easy breezy
the two of
fun
them for game time.
Easy breezy fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's something to be said for that. There's nothing, it's nothing less than to say, hey, I want to sit down and have some easy breezy fun and not have to beat myself up, or beat myself up is even overstating it, but just think real hard. You know,
you got to think real hard. Yeah. You do have to like keep a pen and paper or like a note system somewhere, because the game does none of it for you. And I think that to me is like, we're in an era of game development where there's so many tools at their disposal to say, but this is just the way they wanted to design the game, I think is such a cop out. I honestly think they were too ambitious for their engine, and their engine just cannot run all the systems that an RPG of that scale needs in order to run properly, and they're just missing. And I'm hoping that From Software will patch some stuff, and we've seen them do a couple big patches now post-launch. Some of them the fans are not so happy with. Some of them they are. But I don't think we're going to get like an overhaul of like the menu system, for example.
Yeah.
But I really just, for some reason, I just get irrationally mad when people make these excuses. And I'm like, this game could have been the best game that we've seen in the last 10 years, 20 years, if I think they had made just some different design, basic design choices. And they didn't. Doesn't mean the game is bad, because obviously I'm talking about it. I'm playing it. I'm enjoying my time as much as I'm hating my time with it. And if I truly hated this game, I wouldn't be talking about it and I wouldn't be playing it at all. So I think that that says something that's making people feel. You could literally, as Jeff knows, you can tweet anything with the words Elden Ring in it and like you'll get 500 responses. And I think that that says something. This is clearly the trending game of 2022.
11 million copies sold of
13 million, 13? I think.
Yeah. It's not nothing. And again, if you want to write Andrea about what she thinks, write her, not me.
Please do. I'd be happy to block you.
You can do that by going to @JeffKanata on Twitter.
That's where you find Andrea's
Glenn20,
direct
everybody.
Line. All right. Christian. There's another big game that came out this week, and you have been playing a little of that. Tell me about it.
Dare I say, if this year continues at this pace, 2022 will go down, I think, as the greatest year in video games. Like,
it will also end us.
Yes, it will. Maybe not my favorite game of all time will get released this year, but it's just like nonstop critical consensus 8s, 9s, and 10s, just nonstop. And if you all want to talk about a difficult game, like we talked about how Tiny Tina is easy breezy fun, we talked about Elden Ring being hard, I have a hard game for you. I'm just kidding, it's not hard. Kirby and the Forgotten Land is the game, and it is on Switch, and Andrea and Jeff, it is amazing. It is so delightful. It is Kirby in 3D for the first time, and it feels like a safe approach to 3D, where it feels like the Super Mario 3D world 3Dification of a game versus Galaxy, or what was the hat one that just came out? The other
Odyssey?
Odyssey, thank you.
The hat one.
Super Mario hat.
Which I think is interesting.
They should have called it.
This game, Kirby and the Forgotten Land, very much could have been a Mario game with that hat mechanic, where in Odyssey you are kind of taking powers when you hat things. But it kind of has that 3D world, 3D approach where, yes, it's 3D, but it kind of feels like a linear path, but you're looking for secrets. And it is that thing that Nintendo does so very well. Other games certainly have as also, but what Nintendo does so very well is that completing the level is one thing. And that's all you need to do to advance to the next level. But then there's five other things that you can do in the level as well. You know, collect all the this, unlock the this, find the secret of this, unlock the that. And those things each become increasingly more difficult in a puzzle sense or exploring the world sense. And I mean, it goes back to Donkey Kong Country, right? Or even Mario 3 back in the day in that style of game. And seeing Kirby now brought into this beautiful 3D landscape and what the fun puzzles that Big Mouth mode brings to the table, where, you know, pretty early in the game, you eat a staircase, like a two story or three story staircase. Man,
I feel like I could eat a staircase right now.
Oh, poor Jeff, so hungry.
Oh yeah, Kirby eats everything, Jeff. Just delicious food.
And terrible person.
And it's just really fun to see that interactivity, and there are these little, so many, and on every level, these aha moments that feel like micro, you know, portal moments to create a touch point for people that most people have played, where it's like, oh, if I do this here, then I get to do this. This is incredible. And you have that joy and that euphoria that hits as you kind of figure out this thing to get the last fruit on a tree stump to get the thing that you're only getting for the sake of doing, right? There's no, I don't even know if Switch has trophies or achievements. I don't think it does. Does it?
No.
Not that I pay attention to. And so you're literally doing it just to see the 100% at the end of the level or whatever it is. But Nintendo and HAL Laboratories on this game, they design some of the most beautifully, deceivingly simple levels of any game that you'll play, where you kind of run through and like, oh, that's cool, that's fun. And then it's like, oh, there's so much more I can do here. And seeing Kirby in this new world, in this new landscape, it is just an absolute delight. When I fired it up, my kids were watching, and my oldest goes, oh, wow, this is incredible. Kirby's in the same world as those, what was that game called, Dad? That game with those two girls on the horse. I think you said they went to Seattle. I can't believe Kirby is in that same world. And I'm like, oh, The Last of Us 2? And she's like, yeah. I can't believe Kirby's in The Last of Us. I can't believe
you played The Last of Us 2 with your daughters.
I did show them the open world Seattle part because it's so beautiful. But like, it's clearly not. But I thought like the innocence of a child to see that Kirby is now in a the human world as people of, you know, the nature has taken over the buildings.
I just want to show them two things: the open world Seattle part, and then that part where Joel gets beat to death with a club. That just those two parts.
Gene,
Jeff, I took them straight to the end. I wanted them to know what pain and suffering felt like, so I made them watch it.
No,
I held them down, and then I let go. No, but it's just cute to see this moment of like, wow, it's the same game, and now you're playing as Kirby, isn't it? But it is fantastic. Kirby and the Forgotten Land, I think, will likely be a forgotten title by many because it is not Mario. But it could be like everything about this game. This could be a flagship 3D Mario, Super Mario 3D World 2, you know, but using the hat mechanic for to take on those powers. And I think people would have eaten it up. If you love that style of game, that game that only Nintendo can make, where the joy of doing is the reason to do, Kirby and the Forgotten Land will 100%, I guarantee, scratch that itch. And it's beautiful looking on Switch as well. And there's multiplayer too, Jeff, where you can play with your kid.
Oh, really? No, I got to get it for my five-year-old, right? Because he's going to love it.
It's fantastic. And there's also an easy mode, which I wish Elden Ring did borrow from Tunic in that regard and give you a no-fail
accessibility
mode.
Accessibility options.
It's They're real nice.
Like everyone should have them. Come at me, Souls Bros. Come at me.
Come at me for Kirby Bros.
So John is playing this game next to me on the couch while I'm playing Tiny Tina, and he just keeps exclaiming over and over again every little thing that he finds and how much joy he's getting out of it. He's like, this game is so good. And I'm like, I'm not normally a Kirby person, but I feel like I have to play this game now.
It is that. I mean, it is a dopamine hit of joy constantly. It is, I don't want to use the word cute because that feels like I'm doing it a disservice, but it is just
cute.
It's cute and it's fun and it's creative and big mouth mode while disturbing. I'm not going to say it's not disturbing. It's incredible. The fun things you get to do with it. The car is just it's the absolute best. I love this game. I'll probably be talking about it at the end of the year. Well, probably not, because next month's going to be full of more tens, but.
Well, the Kirby franchise, again, underrated. And I think, I don't want to say something blasphemous, although we're doing a lot of that tonight. I might like more Kirby games more than I like Mario games. I don't know. I love the Mario games. I love Mario games, but there are Kirby games that
your kid walks in and is like, Dad, you are dead
I
to
know,
me.
Right? I mean, I love Mario. I love Mario games. I love a lot of Mario games, but I'll take, you know, Kirby and the Canvas Curse. I'll take Kirby and the, there's so many, it's just such a, a franchise that goes crazy places and does wacky things and has new mechanics in almost every game. And yes, Mario does that. I mean, I don't need to compare things. What am I doing? I don't need
Mario
to compare. Mario's great.
That.
Kirby's great. I just feel
Mario
like
Mario sucks, right? He's just the worst.
You're right. You know,
look
Mario
at how he's
and
been
Elden Ring.
Pressing Peach this whole time.
If there's two terrible games, it's any Mario game and Elden Ring. Am I right? Am I right, audience?
Hey, our listenership is way up. So I want to say right now that after you listen to that, my name, I'm just kidding.
I'm just saying that people don't talk about Kirby with the reverence they talk about these other franchises. And it is deserving of it. It is deserving of it. They're always so wild and different and fun and whimsical. They bring the whimsy, and I love whimsy.
My only nit for Kirby and the Forgotten Land, and you don't really need it because it is that 3D world style 3D world. You can't invert the Y axis. I am a invert.
That's because
OG,
you are,
and you can't. There's not even an option.
You're can't believe I agreed to come on this podcast. I did not know you were an invert.
Mm. Yeah, he's a weirdo.
Sorry, I've been playing games for my whole life, so I was raised on single analog stick.
Kirby,
games, and that's
the one message Kirby has for you is not get good, but just get right, get correct.
Okay, left-handed mouse, get out of here!
How dare you? How dare
you? Oh,
wait,
do you use a left-handed mouse?
I do. I'm left-handed.
I'm left-handed too, but I use a right-handed mouse like a person.
Because you've conformed to the right-triarchy.
I've honestly never tried a left-handed mouse. Maybe it'll have an epiphany.
Big right hand.
Hardcore PC. Oh. PC gamer afterwards.
I've already seen some of your Warzone shots. I can't imagine playing against you with an actual left-handed mouse, Andrea. You'd climb the leaderboards even faster.
She's like Princess Bride, and I am not right-handed. And then she switches up and you're like, oh!
Ted Lasso playing darts. Yeah, let's go.
Yeah, exactly. Spoiler. We're all doing spoilers tonight.
For a two-year-old or three-year-old show. Yeah, sorry.
Oh, and I was how old is Last of Us Part Two?
Still fresh in my mind.
1 year old, barely.
2 years old.
Okay, two, fine.
What I wouldn't give, Andrea, to go back in time and to tell myself, just leave the mouse on the right-hand side and just force yourself to learn it. You know how much of my life would be easier if I had just done that?
Nobody, I'm still like shook. The first time I heard about left-handed mouse was probably in my like early 30s. I was like, wait. That's a thing that exists? And people are like, yeah, you've never tried a left-handed mouse and you're left-handed? I was like, no, I just always use the right-handed mouse because I thought there was only one way to use a mouse.
Yeah. No, I'm the guy that would go to E3 and walk up to the kiosk and be like, I'm sorry, I got to move this to the other side. I'm really sorry.
Jeff even has a left-handed trackpad on his laptop.
As you do if you're left-handed, I guess.
All right, enough of this nonsense. We have I think systematically infuriated everybody in some way tonight, which is mission accomplished. Hey, we do have parting gifts coming up, but this is gonna do it for this episode of DLC. So stick around for those parting gifts because we're gonna do that, and we got the whole bonus show, DLC bonus show, Christian and I will do as well. But Andrea Renee, you are the best. Thank you for being here. We love you.
Aw, thanks for having me, guys. This was fun. And hopefully no one takes, you know, my comments about Elden Ring too seriously. I do think it's a really great game, but Tiny Tina, man, so much fun.
It's games. It's games. No use getting so upset.
It's a great time to be a video game fan. I think we can all universally agree.
Unbelievable.
There is something literally between Elden Ring and Tiny Tina and Kirby. There's something for everybody right now.
Truly. And that's just 1 week. I mean, it's insane. It's insane. Yeah. There were years of my life when if a game like Tiny Tina's Wonderlands came out, it'd be like, what? Games are incredible. A whole year of getting, you know, that. But now that's just like a blip in the constant stream of magnificence that is video games. Anyway, tell folks so they can keep up with you and all of the awesome things that you put out on the internet.
Sure. The best place to follow me is always on Twitter at Andrea Renee. It's where I link everything from working with Twitch gaming. I just did the ID at Xbox Showcase, which was really fun, to episodes of What's Good Games. Wherever you guys listen to DLC in podcast form, you can also find What's Good Games. Hopefully you guys will check us out. We have our 5-year anniversary coming up.
Wow.
Just a couple of months. Well, actually in a month, which is kind of wild to think about. So that's kind of pretty exciting. So
It was like, yeah, you guys I look just forward started. To
hopefully getting back into games more. But, you know, baby, baby life.
Today, speaking of anniversaries, today, as we record this, the 27th of March, is the 15th anniversary of the first episode of the Totally Rad Show.
Yay!
Which is my first internet thing, which is pretty crazy. I'm old. Anyway, Christian, what do you got going on this week?
Apparently looking for an anniversary to celebrate. This has been, sorry, 27. I have a newsletter where I write long form about video games that you can find at tinyletter.com/Christian Spicer. I do about one or two a month. The one I am working on right now is this, as I'm mentally struggling and wrestling with the idea of open world games and side missions. I think it's super interesting topic to cover and address. So I'm trying to get my thoughts out myself before I throw them at Jeff or a guest. I want to try to solidify my own thoughts because some of my favorite moments in gaming have been side missions, and other times I get very frustrated by even the notion of them. So that will be coming in the newsletter, which is again tinyletter.com/Christian Spicer. And then Twitter's the best way to see other stuff at Spicer, S-P-I-C-E-R. And then this show, I usually stream live, not this week because I'm on the beach, but I usually stream it live on my Twitch, which is twitch.tv/Christian Spicer. And then Jeff, I've heard we've, you know, maybe put our logo on some cool stuff that people might get to see maybe next week.
Yes,
maybe.
Yes, yes. That announcement is forthcoming, but we will have this logo is so cool. Hopefully you've all seen it by now. We're so happy with it. And I think it's going to be something you want to emblazon on your person. So we're going to make that possible.
Like Andrea's Elden Ring tattoo. You can get
yeah, exactly.
yeah, exactly.
You can also follow me. I'm on Twitter at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled two N's and one T. And I got other shows you might want to check out, including the Film Cast, which is about movies and TV shows. And, oh gosh, what else? We got We Have Concerns, which is my comedy science show I do with Anthony Carboni. You can find that at wehaveconcerns.com. The Dungeon Run. This is my last week on The Dungeon Run. Wednesday will be my final show on what? The Dungeon Run. Yep. 115 episodes, over 440 hours of content, story created by me. Very, very proud of it. Hopefully we
I really thought last week was going to be the last week as there was some stuff. I don't want to spoil it, people that are behind, but there was some stuff that was happening. And I was like, is he just going to end it? Right. There's not getting out of this. There's no way. I tweeted it out and I felt bad as I tweeted it, like live tweeted it out as it happened. But some characters got into some stuff, buddy.
We're crescendoing. So check it out. You can find that on Twitch, twitch.tv/The Dungeon Run or YouTube or as an audio podcast works well. The fan controlled football show, which you can find at twitch.tv/FCF. I feel like I'm leaving something out, but that's enough. All right, let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts. Hey, give us a suggestion. Andrea wrote her parting gift as a question in our document, to which I will answer an enthusiastic yes, yes, but I will always talk about it more because I love it with my whole heart. Andrea, what's your parting gift?
My question was, have you talked about Bluey? And obviously, you guys may have deduced that I am a parent now. We talked about it at the top of the show. I have a 10-month-old, and when she was very young, John and I started watching some kids content just because we're like, you know, just let's have some kids content on in the back. And so, of course, you know, you go to Disney Junior, you know, full disclosure, my husband does work for Disney. And the show Bluey came on and I was like, oh, I love their accents. They're Australian. This is great. But then you actually watch the show and it's like, this is actually the best kids program I've ever seen.
Of all time. I don't care that
I've watched these episodes a million times because they're all so good.
Yeah. It's genius. It literally every part of it is genius. The music is genius. I don't know how they get the vocal performances out of the little kids that they get. I don't know
actual children.
I know. They won't even reveal their names because they don't want the kid. But the performances are God tier. I don't understand how you get those performances out of little people. It's incredible. The art is beautiful. The design, the details of everything, the writing, like there's nothing that's not perfection.
It's literally perfect. And every time I watch it, I'm like, I just need more of it. How has somebody not bought this and just funneled millions of dollars into the production of this show?
Yeah.
Episodes are 8 minutes, which is perfect if it's only one, but you can also watch all of them. We named our new puppy after Bingo, after the little sister.
Oh, amazing.
It covers, you know, important issues too.
Incredible. Like
there's stuff that it hits that is important, and I think it does it in a way that is really good to introduce children to. And also, as a dad, the only bad part about Bluey is that the dad in Bluey is better than I will ever be.
But there's an episode about that.
He's such an impossible standard.
There is.
Though I will say that John and I joke that you, Jeff, would probably get close as like a master improviser. Like, I bet Jeff does his best to try to compete with Bandit. But like Bandit Bandit's bar is like literally impossible to hit.
One of my favorite episodes. By the way, my 3-year-old daughter's question when she meets somebody new is, what's your favorite episode of Bluey? But one of my favorite episodes of Bluey
Keepy
is
Uppy, probably.
That's a great one, but is, that's Dance what you're mode. Saying is yours. It's a great one. Keepy
Dance
great.
Mode,
but is this episode called Octopus, which is all about another dad. Like it's a friend of Bluey's that comes over and plays with Bandit and has the great time and comes home to her dad and he can't be as cool as Bandit. And the whole episode is how he can't live up to Bandit. And so they have to figure out a way to relate on their own level. And it's gorgeous and beautiful and amazing. So like the show is even self-aware enough to know that Bandit is an unattainable ideal. And yes. Chili is pretty great too. I'll be honest. Chili is pretty great.
You know, Chili is wonderful. I mean, all of the characters are just so good. And I love how all the neighbors like commit to the bits too.
Yes.
Which is wonderful. So wonderful. And they do leave just a little bit of like magical in there from time to time. You're like, they do so good at making everything grounded in realism, but then from time to time they'll sprinkle in just like a little bit of this is not a real thing, but we're just gonna add it in for funsies. And it's great, it's fun. Like obviously, you know, there's a lot of, you know, Karens on the internet ready to tell you that your kids shouldn't be watching screens, and I would immediately fire back, screens are just ubiquitous and they're always going to be part of our kids' life, so don't come at me, bro, about my kid being on a screen. Like, they're going to watch screens. It's just part of what it is. And if they're going to be in front of a screen at some point, I want it to be quality content. And all I need is more Bluey. I just need new episodes. It's so funny when John or I, like, stumble across an episode that we haven't watched, because I'm pretty sure I've watched them all. He actually, you know, has an adult job that he goes to. So he hasn't watched as much as I have. And he's like, have I not seen this? And I was like, oh no, I've seen this one like 5 times. And he's like, I don't think I've seen this one. And it's such a joy to stumble across a new episode of Bluey.
Well, there's an entire...
How is John's adult job not getting more episodes of Bluey?
Yeah.
He, you know, like, get on that. I tell whatever him
whatever
he's doing.
I'm like, who has the money? You do. Even though it's not his department. He, you know, works in video games, not in children's animation.
Well, but what a waste.
There's an entire third season that has been released in Australia. So we have that. At least we know it's been made.
Wait, is this something I can VPN into?
Yes, you can.
This is so exciting.
Yes, you can.
I know what I'm doing tonight.
Bluey is the very best. All right, Christian, what is your parting gift?
Not nearly as interesting, but there will be an interesting conversation about it. There's a recipe that we actually ate tonight that we eat often, and it is crispy gnocchi with burst tomatoes and mozzarella, and it's from the New York Times cooking app is how we discovered it. It is incredible. It you know, of the same vein of the TikTok feta pasta dish in terms of like general ease, which that TikTok viral feta pasta dish also delicious. But this crispy gnocchi dish is a regular in our house. It is incredible. Jeff, I kind of want to talk to you about some cooking stuff based on that and this, that, and the other. And I know it, you know, you've gotten more into it, and I want to talk some recipes with you.
Let's do it. We'll be doing that in the paid DLC show, which is exclusive to our patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. My parting gift, I have a number of things to talk to you about in the bonus show, but you know how A lot of folks are saying that it's only March, the end of March right now, and we've already seen game of the year for video games. A lot of folks are saying Elden Ring, nothing's going to beat it. It's only 3 months in to this year, and yet game of the year has already come out. I'm here to tell you that might also be the case with movies. We may have already gotten, or at least about to get, the best movie of the year for me, my favorite movie of the year. I don't know how it's going to be topped. And it is a movie called Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. It stars Michelle Yeoh, and it is a work of utter mad genius. The only thing I can compare it to is the moment when I saw The Matrix for the first time in movie theaters. Not that they are anything like similar movies, but just that feeling of witnessing directors at the very top of their game, working on a level no one else is even attempting. That's the feeling I got with Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. I believe it comes out April 8th. I got a chance to see it early. Run, do not walk to see this movie. It is going to blow your mind, and everyone is going to be talking about it.
Is it worth paying $100 for a babysitter to go?
Yes.
Hmm.
Yes. You, Andrea, I have never been more confident that you are going to love this movie.
No, I'm confident I'm going to love it. I'm just like, is it going to be worth the theater cost? Because I love seeing movies in theaters.
Yeah.
I like really enjoy that experience. I haven't had it for over 2 years now because of the pandemic, but
you're in your COVID grace period. Take advantage of it.
I know. But again, childcare, expensive, man.
It's no joke. I feel you. Anyway, that's Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. And it comes out soon. We did get a listener-suggested parting gift. This was sent to us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. This was sent to us by Steve from London. Steve writes, my parting gift is for the metal fans in your audience who want to gent like computer. Oh, excuse me. Gent like computer. Let me explain. A musician and programmer named Dennis Martinson has been working on a project to procedurally generate songs in a specific style of metal known as djent, which is onomatopoeia for the sound the guitars make. Over the last few years, he's developed and refined a huge library of algorithms that generate drum patterns, ambient layering, rhythm guitar, bass, and randomizes these elements within predefined rule sets to control things like song tempo, length, and intensity of each section, instrumentation, scales, and patterns. The result is an infinite amount of instrumental metal. It's incredibly listenable, and given its infinite nature and the lack of vocals, can be great working background music for people into metal. As I write this, I'm listening to track number 3,963. He runs a 24/7 live stream on YouTube, which you can find by searching 24/7 Gent, which is spelled D-J-E-N-T. The URL changes every time the stream goes down and has a selection of handpicked tracks in the album called The Infinity Construct Chapter 1, available wherever you get your music. Thanks, Steve from London. This is mind-boggling. I have to check this out. I've never heard of anything like it, but maybe it's the future of all things.
It reminds me a little bit of this band that John introduced me to called Bang Camaro.
Oh, yeah. I love Bang Camaro.
Because they have AI-written lyrics in their songs, right?
He must know them because there's a track in Guitar Hero from Bang Camaro, right? Or Rock Band, one of the two?
Yeah. That's how he knows them. But I think they have a song in Peacemaker.
Yes.
The new Peacemaker TV series show, for people who are like maybe haven't heard about it. It's also wonderful.
Very funny.
If you guys haven't watched that show.
Very funny. It's not Disney, it's not that good. It's fine. It's whatever, you know? I guess if you like that stuff.
Yeah, I guess this might be the future of all music where it's just the computer wrote it. It's infinite. There's never a stop point. It's all good and no humans needed.
Yeah. To be fair, I haven't been on this podcast for 5 years.
Well, it shows, Christian. Everybody can tell. Everybody can tell. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Christian Spicer and Andrea Renee for hanging out with me. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for making those bumpers. Thanks to White Cube for our brand new show music. And I also need to thank our Hype Train patrons. Every single week, our Hype Train patrons get a shout out at the end of the show. These are the most generous of our patrons, and we are grateful. So let's hit that music. Gotta thank Andy Joyce, Kyle Starr, Anthony Gulas, Riley Knox, Dan Flanagan, Sasan, Rob Rickman, Hank Patton, Adam Denby, Scooby Diesel, Cheesy Bob, Victor Valenzuela, Jonathan Talbert, Chris Zacharias, Matt Bradley, Jeff Luxack, Will with one L Harris, Jonathan Putney, Mitchell Ness, Jimmy Radcliffe, Mark Gowland, Awesome US Movies, Malcolm King, oh yes, The Switch Bits, Dan Palmino, Neil Shaw, Lloyd Nans, Scott Hughes, Ben, Kevin Brazell, Jenny, Nate, Stu Goss, Zachary White, Jonathan Spiceman Forever Schlepfer, Yick, Albert, Fur Hildegaios, Sorensen, Spiceman Silencer, Super Garb, Travis, Mike Lombardo, Michael Buck, Jackson, Michael Stadler, Sleg, the Watashima Henny, Nick Strauss Klein, Dad, Josh Peak, PSV, Christian Bravery, Ratsu, Clifton Satterfeld, and Jason Novak. We'll see you next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.